Welcome to Rooting For You, a seasonal gardening podcast for non-experts. I'm Tess, and I know nothing.
And I'm Elise, and I know some things.
Each week, we'll chat about one gardening topic, and then discuss the effort-reward payoff by asking, is the juice worth the squeeze? Just a heads up, there might be a bit of swearing in this episode. You've been warned. Here in Melbourne, we've had a very wet few weeks this year, which has resulted in devastating flooding across many parts of the eastern states. For any of our listeners that have been impacted by the flooding, our thoughts are with you. With all this wet weather around, we've had a few requests come in for an episode on a wet spring. So here it is. What we're experiencing is called a La Niña weather event. Elise, any idea what that is?
Not a freaking clue.
Now, I'm not an expert, but I've done a little bit of reading, and this is my basic understanding of it. If I've got anything wrong,
I'm not going to be able to tell you.
So it's got to do with ocean temperature and winds in the Pacifics. And what it means for us here in Australia, which you've already gathered, is that we'll have an increased chances of above average rainfall. So according to this Sydney Morning Herald article I read, since 1900, Australia's had 20 La Niña events. And the average rainfall from December to March has been 20% higher than the long-term average.
I can feel that.
It's quite a lot of rain.
But, you know, 20 in what, like 100 years, once every 5 years? Is that about?
Well, I think so. I think they happen in like certain cycles. And what we've got now is a third La Niña in a row. And that's quite rare, apparently.
Okay. Yeah, I have found the last few years have been particularly wet, which has been nice for a, you know, you don't have to water as much, but it's definitely had its other challenges. But interesting, I suppose the reason why I say one in every five on average is there are the things we can talk about today in this episode will be good for people this year, but also like might help people planning their garden in the future because we are going to have these really heavy rains.
Oh, yeah. It seems like they're cyclical.
Cyclical. Yeah. So, you know, whether you're planning your garden or you're dealing with this stuff kind of as we are right now, I think there's a lot of like benefits to thinking about heavy rainfall. Anything else you can tell us about this La Niña?
Nah.
Nothing.
People will definitely know more about it than I have learned in my few minutes of reading, but look, that's just setting the scene.
Well, look, the aim of this podcast is who cares, what or why, we got lots of rain, what are we going to do about it? It's probably the summary.
Yes. So what are we going to do about it?
What are we going to do about it? Okay. Well, first off, we need to talk about drainage in soil.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big one. Now, if you're getting a lot of rain and you're seeing water pooling on top of your soil, like it's not draining through, that's a problem. The other way that you can really tell that you've got a poor drainage problem in the garden is a bad smell.
Ah.
So if you have like a bit of a wet dog smell or a bit of like literally a shitty smell after rain or, you know, in the garden, that's a problem. And what that says is your soil is so waterlogged that it's become anaerobic. So soil, it shouldn't ever smell shitty, right? It's when the oxygen, when it's, your plants are effectively, and your soil is effectively drowning in water. So it's got no air in it anymore. It's just got water and it creates like a bad fermentation, which you get this bad smell. So if you've got either of those things happening after rain, that's a problem. The unfortunate answer here is you really need to work on your soil before these events happen. There's only so much we can do once you're at that point. If you didn't have anything planted in this garden bed or this pot or this soil, whatever this soil is that's waterlogged, and you might have something planted in it and it's actually going to die because the soil is so waterlogged. And like I said, your plant will actually drown in the garden bed. If you're either going to pull the plant out or you don't have anything in there, get some compost, get some straw, even some sand, and actually like mix it into the soil. And that's going to really help the drainage and help kind of absorb some of that moisture out. That's a really good solution. But the problem is often you've already got something in there. And sure, you can like put some sand on top or put some compost on top, but it's not, it's going to do a little bit, but you know, it's only so far it's going to go. So this really comes down to when we're setting up our garden beds, we say it every episode, like get your soil really good so it drains.
Mm.
This is the key.
if you're going to go out to your garden today and do a water test for is my garden draining properly, how quickly should the water absorb into soil for you not to have a problem?
Yeah, good question.
I don't know. If it's sitting up there for a few minutes, is that?
Oh, no, that'd be fine. If it's sitting up there for an hour.
Right, okay.
You've got a problem.
Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes with, this is a bit of a tangent, but like if soil is so dry, often water will actually pool on the top of a pot. That's a totally different thing. That's when the soil becomes like hydrophobic and it actually can't absorb water. That's a totally separate issue. You see that. But if soil is happily moistured, which being spring and being outside, I would expect it to be, if it's still sitting there in an hour, that's a problem.
With that super dry soil that you mentioned, is the way to fix that just to do more regular watering?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's going to take – you're going to water it quite a few times, and what will happen is the water will just continue. You see this with indoor plants that people have neglected or pots that people have neglected. Yeah, yeah. Then the water will sit on the top. It will eventually drain through, but it's actually not going to be absorbed. It's kind of just going to go in one end and out the other. So you got to keep watering it over and over again. If you can, if it was an indoor plant and it could fit in the sink, I would actually put it in the sink, fill the sink with water, and just force it to absorb. Now, if you took a healthy plant and submerged it in water, this would be a really bad idea, right? Because it's, again, this whole drowning issue. But for a plant or a pot that's really struggling, that submerging technique will just force that soil to eventually take up water. So it's funny, isn't it, that water pooling on the top can actually mean two opposite problems.
Yeah.
But you're going to know looking at the soil whether it's so dry that it can't absorb water versus it's so wet that it's waterlogged.
Yeah. And I think that you have some options to test it. So if it is pooling, you know, give it a few waters, give it a few cracks and see what happens.
Yeah.
If it's still pooling, I think you can assume that your drainage is no good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if your drainage is no good, I think you're going to know about it.
Yeah, okay.
Is my guess. So first off, what we do is we sort our shit out earlier in the year and we get our soil nailed. But if you haven't done that, as I said, mix some sand, some compost, some straw through it. If it's a pot, sometimes like the drainage in the bottom can be a bit clogged up for whatever reason. So if you get your pot and just lift it off the ground, like put it on a brick or something, can sometimes help draining out the bottom if that's an issue. Obviously for garden beds, we can't do that. Although raised garden beds are generally okay with the drainage depending on, because usually they've got good soil in them anyway because you've kind of built them up yourself. The other thing you can do with pots is when it is really heavily raining is get a plastic bag, just like a supermarket shopping bag, and put it over the top of the pot. Depends what's in it, right? And like you don't want to leave that there. And obviously if there's heavy winds, that's going to be a problem. But just stopping so much water
getting in.
Obviously moving the pot
cover area.
Yeah. And even like it doesn't have to be inside, but even just the side of your house, like right against a wall, even though it's still outside, you'll find that'll get a lot less water than what it does in like the middle of the yard. So just trying to reduce the amount of water getting into the pots. I mean, we can do this with pots, right? We can't really do this with the garden beds.
No. Unless you like string up a tarp or something.
Well, you know me, I'm not opposed to that. But what can happen with the stringing up a tarp situation, because literally I've done it, is then the water can pool in one corner and then hit the garden bed and then actually like flood one part of the garden at the expense of the others. So if you're going to do that, you need to do it well is the summary to that. If you've got grow bags, which we are a big fan of, I find these can sometimes be a little bit problematic with the drainage because you can't really get them up off the ground. Like you can't put your grow bags on bricks. So just put them somewhere in the garden that water's not pooling. So if you had like a sloping situation, like a grow bag there is going to do well. Or like on a concrete driveway or something because water's not going to
pop them up on a few bricks as well. I reckon it could be an option. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know more about growing in grow bags than I do these days.
You'd need a few bricks to keep it.
Well, I mean, depending on the size as well. But yeah, if you can get it up off the ground, that's going to be really good too. But again, with the pots and the grow bags, like if you set them up well from day dot with the good soil, they're going to drain well. Now, if you're growing in the ground, you've got another issue to deal with here is that when you get like a deluge of water, that can sometimes actually wash away the top of your soil. This doesn't really happen with pots and raised garden beds. And this is such a shame because you think about the top of your soil, it's usually got
all the good stuff.
All the good stuff, right? The compost you just put on, the mulch you just put on, all this kind of like good stuff. The last thing you want is for that to get washed away. And if you've got young plants in there that can actually wash them away, if you've got seeds in there, they're going to get washed away because they're all going to be quite close to the top. So if you're growing in the ground, think about how the water is going to flow and then dig a few little trenches to direct water away.
Okay.
So if you have, I mean, most people aren't growing on perfectly flat ground, or even if they are, there's probably a raise or a dip at some other point. If you can see the direction the water's coming in and then kind of dig a little trench, so as the water comes down to your garden bed, it's not going over your garden bed, it's kind of directed around your garden bed. I'm not saying like you don't need an excavator and, you know, a proper drainage system. It's just like literally like a little moat around your garden bed to just stop any water. Because water coming down on the garden bed is kind of fine. Water running, sorry, coming down like literally from the sky straight down, fine. Water running across your garden bed is a real problem.
Yeah.
And even in this last week with the rains we've had in Melbourne, my garden beds are all fine. I don't have any garden beds that have had situations where the soil's washed away. But in my chicken coop, right, where I've got heaps of straw and sawdust and different things for the chickens, I had one deluge come down and literally half the straw in the chicken yard is now halfway down the hill.
Right.
It literally took it. And that was when I thought, all right, if you were growing in the ground – like, in, you know, you could really lose a lot of soil. So we don't want that.
No.
This is another good reason why to grow in raised garden beds.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I love them anyway.
Yeah.
But this raid issue is one of them.
Anything else to add about drainage?
Nah.
So that's all on drainage. The next question I wanted to ask you, and this is coming up, I mean, I'm seeing so many of the accounts that we follow on Instagram are having this problem. Mm. And I actually reposted our snails episode recently on our stories. Slugs and snails everywhere.
They are out of control.
They're a rain thing, aren't they?
They're a rain thing.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So back in that episode, we talked about how they love kind of warmish, really moist conditions.
Yeah, so they are just like, La Nina, come at me.
Literally, this is their Christmases all come at once. And they are relentless at the moment. Every time I harvest a bowl of salad, which is a thing that I'm eating so much off from the garden at the moment, it's like, would you like some slugs with your lettuce? Like, would you like some lettuce with your slugs? Because that's the amount I'm getting. Like, they are just horrendous. And, yeah, I've had so many people, again, post, like, what do I do? They're just out of control. So they are out of control. It's not you. It's La Nina.
Yep.
Blame her. Is it a
her.
It's a her. Okay.
Yeah, it translates to little girl in Spanish.
There you go. Go back and listen to that episode because there's 40,000 options. But I will say I'm resorting to snail bait at the moment.
Right.
Which is, you know, that was, die days.
Yeah. I think that was one of our more drastic measures that we discussed. And we had a bunch of options that we discussed then.
So many options. And I've just cracked it. I mean, obviously the size of your garden also is going to make it like, you know, for me to go around and put copper tape around everything I'm growing, like,
yeah,
there's a month of my life gone. So, look, with the snail bait, I don't love it, but I do use the one that's meant to be the more environmentally friendly one, that's the high iron, which is safe if birds and stuff. Look, I don't love the idea, but if you're going to get one, go for the better version of it. Look, a little bit of snail bait goes a really long way to controlling this problem. And when the plants are bigger, like my kale's getting smashed by snails, though, but I don't really care, right? Because the plant's so big. Mm. If I eat a few leaves that have got some holes in them, I don't care. The problem is around your seedlings because they will just kill them. So if there's ever a place to use the snail bait, it's around the freshly planted little seedlings.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where I'm focusing it because that's where
that's they can do the most weakest damage. Point.
That's the weakest point. And that's where I think people are really struggling at the moment because it is raining this much, but it also is the peak time to plant everything. So it's a really bad combination for the seedling, for the spring seedling planting.
Did you watch that video that I sent you recently on Instagram, the Frenchie gardener, on dealing with his slugs and snails?
Oh, I actually didn't watch it.
Oh, you need to go back and watch it.
I just thought you wanted me to check out his account.
Also, I mean, it's great. He gardens in small spaces, yeah. So it's a great account.
He's a good small space gardener.
But he does the beer trick. He actually has a overripe banana as well, but he gets his beer and he puts it on a plate, but then he goes out there at night and shows you all of the slugs and snails like coming to this beer party.
This beer trap. Yeah.
So anyway, it's a great one. I'll repost it on.
Well, I actually have used the beer trap plenty of times. Long story short, a partner of mine got gifted 48 like cases of VB.
What?
And
like, is that a good present?
Oh my god! Well, it was like for winning some competition or something. I don't know. Anyway, like he didn't drink VB, I don't drink VB, so we had all this beer, and I was like, oh, I know exactly what I'm going to do with this. It's going to be my slugs and snails solution. So I actually used it, and it is very effective. Like they come to the party. The problem when it's raining this much is the beer thing gets like, just be flooded. Like
diluted. Yeah,
it just gets like diluted to the point that it's rainwater. So I actually found, even though it would be the perfect time to set it up now, I haven't been using any beer traps because they just turn into very diluted beer traps and therefore less effective. So that's
anyway,
a shame.
I'll repost this for another time because it's a great video.
And I could confidently say the beer thing does work well.
Okie dokie, so we've covered off drainage and dealing with increased slugs and snails in the garden. Mm-hmm. What's next?
I am a fan of this anyway, but I think it is particularly important when it's raining so much is covering your seedlings when you're planting them out. I've talked about this, I think pretty much every episode we've done this spring. Mm. I've said cover them with a plastic cloche. This is going to, again, protect from the slugs and snails, so benefit. But secondly, when that rain is just smashing them, they don't have the strength to kind of like fight it like a big plant does. Like they're still like a tender, you know, they've got like thin
working on
skin.
Their resilience.
Exactly, exactly. And heavy rain would just literally kill them. So for me, everything I've planted out this spring without fail, I've got under plastic, except my spring onions. That's the only thing that's braving it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I usually plant most things under plastic, but not everything, but this year I've gone everything. And like we discussed in the last few episodes, I actually haven't lost many seedlings, if any, at all. I think I've actually lost one tramaccino since we spoke last, but that's it, which I think given how horrendous the weather's been is a pretty good outcome. So if you're going with the seedlings and you're really setting up for success, a little plastic cover is going to go a long way at any time, but I think particularly in these weather conditions.
And I think it's worth mentioning again here that you have plastic covers that you've bought that are purpose built that you use again and again and again, but you can just use like a juice container that just chopped in half as well.
Even like sometimes I've got, you know, plastic tubs that you like store stuff in that.
Like Tupperware or?
Nah, like bigger ones. Like, you know, you'd put all your keepsakes or your wrapping paper in or.
I literally have no idea what you're talking about.
Like a 40-litre plastic tub you get from like the $2 shop. Oh, I'm looking around my house. Can we see one?
I can understand. Yeah.
And they stack on top of each other. They've got lids. Sometimes they've got wheels. You put them in your garage.
Oh, yeah.
Are you
storage containers.
A storage container. Yeah. Well, often they're like a light plastic. Mm. Obviously, if they're black, you can't use them. But if they're a light plastic and then sometimes like they've got a crack in them so I don't want to use them for storage anymore, then I just turn them upside down.
Oh, and cover a whole bunch.
Right. And then actually the crack or whatever's going on is a benefit because that's like airflow.
Yeah.
Ventilation.
Yes.
So there's a lot of crap around the house that you can kind of repurpose. And, you know, same, you could use plastic Tupperware containers.
Mm.
Go for gold. Whatever you've got. The ones I've bought, I love and I do use them over and over and over again. But, you know, wherever we can not spend money in the garden and reuse, I'm for. Yeah,
great shout.
But I've got a combo of both.
What else do we need to worry about in terms of protecting our little seedlings?
The seedlings are probably going to be okay if you've got them protected from the elements and from the slugs and snails. But as they grow up, I'm very concerned about fungal infections with all this water.
Mm.
We did talk about this in the cucumbers episode recently, the zucchini episode, but you are going to be fighting an uphill battle with fungal infections.
What types of things are you thinking about when you say fungal infections?
Definitely powdery mildew.
Yeah, okay. So that's one that we see commonly on zucchinis.
We do see commonly in zucchinis, cucumbers, pumpkins. There's a lot that tomatoes get. Oh, I think there's like a black spot. I can't remember the names, but there's a lot of tomato issues that are fungal infections.
Okay. So if you're getting an issue on your tomato, like you'll see it on the
leaves. Yeah, you'll see it on the leaves.
You can assume that's a fungal infection.
I would go with that first. I mean, Google it. There's one that's definitely black spot, and it's literally black spots on your tomatoes. Your tomatoes can also get, I don't know if it's actually called powdery mildew, but it's effectively the same thing.
Yeah, right.
On tomatoes, and they're like the white spots.
Okay.
So any kind of leaf spots is going to be a fungal infection. So look, when we talked about zucchinis and cucumbers, you know, we just said that like this is inevitable that we're going to get fungal infections. What we want to try and do is slow it down as best we can.
Mm-hmm.
So things we are going to do with all plants if we see any kind of fungal infection situations is trim off the leaves that have the fungal infection for starters. Obviously, towards the end of the season, it's going to get to the point that you're not doing that because your whole zucchini plant has powdery mildew. But in the earlier stages, when you see it, chop it off.
Mm-hmm.
Don't put it in your compost. Put it in the bin. Like we said, make it someone else's problem.
Your green bin if you got one.
Your green bin if you got one. The other thing, when we talked about growing tomatoes, whatever episode that was, probably last year, I said when you plant them, I want you to give them a haircut on the bottom. So I want this like skirt of no leaves.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's great. I do that every year. I would recommend you do it every year. But in years like this, we're really going to want to give those tomatoes a very naked bottom,
mm-hmm.
for want of a better description.
Like how many centimetres do you reckon?
Well, it's a good question because obviously you've got to keep doing it as the plant gets bigger.
Yeah.
So you don't want to ever take off too many leaves. But I'm thinking when the plant is, say, a metre tall and upwards, I would have half a metre of nakedness.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Now, if there's any fruit on that bottom bit or any like flowers, obviously we leave those.
Yep.
But any leaves, chop them straight off.
Yeah. Okay.
That's going to go a really long way to helping the tomato in this wet weather.
Mm-hmm.
So at the moment, as mine, I've got tomatoes planted and every couple of, maybe every week or two, I kind of look at them and I'm like, oh yeah, you're getting a bit taller. I chop off the bottom again.
Okay.
And I do have little flower stalk situations starting. So I just ignore them, trim around them. It will make your tomatoes grow taller, which I actually find a pain in the ass, but the benefits are there.
Yeah.
Now, for your other veggies, which are prone to the fungal infections, like the zucchinis, the cucumbers, we talked about this in both those episodes recently. We want to train these upwards, off the ground.
Yes.
Airflow, really important.
Mm.
So as much as in other years, I might let my cucumbers just trail down the side of raised garden beds, won't be doing that this year.
Okay.
Airflow, this is another really boring answer, but look, planting less densely will create more airflow, which is better for fungal infections too.
Right.
So, you know, if you're being really prudent, you might space things out a bit more just because we want to get as much airflow around our plants.
Yep. Isn't that the idea of trellising everything up though. I think that's it's a great shout.
It is. And look, there's so many things that can be trellised. Like obviously tomatoes don't naturally, but we always grow them, you know, in cages or trellises or something. Your zucchinis, your cucumbers, pumpkins you can grow up, your snow peas, your beans, all those things already grow up. So there's a lot we can do to just get our produce off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
If you're growing things like pumpkins, these can be a bit heavy to get all off the ground and they obviously sit for a very long time before they're ready, right? I don't want your pumpkins sitting in like a pool of water on the ground.
Mm.
While it's growing. So if you've got something like that, get a bit of straw, get a bit of plastic, get a brick
and
up underneath, you know, because what will happen is the bottom of your pumpkin is going to rot out and you're going to see this beautiful pumpkin go to harvest it and then realize the bottom of it's gone.
That would be devastating.
It really would be. And for something like a pumpkin, like obviously you're not going to put every little cucumber up off a block, but for something like a pumpkin or even like a decent sized zucchini, you're going to want to like – yeah, quick lift off the ground. Bob's your uncle.
Anything else to add about sort of managing this super wet weather?
If you've got garden beds that you haven't planted out yet, there are some veggies that aren't going to mind this torrential rain.
Yeah, so, right. Okay, hit us.
Yeah, so it might be a good year to skip, you know, the zucchinis, the tomatoes. God forbid anyone skips the tomatoes.
No one's skipping the tomatoes.
Skipping the tomatoes. Veggies that won't mind that you can plant now: silver beet, kale, sprouting broccoli, rocket, your peas and your snow peas, all your root veg, and mint.
Nice one.
They're all going to be.
I'm unsurprised that mint doesn't care.
Mint loves the wet weather. It'll be happy as a pig in shit. In fact, it might be the only plant that's actually happy about it being La Nina. If you've got chickens, chickens and mud are a really bad combination. It's bad for their feet. We talked about this in the chicken episode. A really great option, and I did a video on this on Instagram recently, is get some pellets, you know, old shipping pellets, put them down on the ground anywhere that's really wet and boggy. The chickens are going to walk on the pellet. It's going to keep their feet nice and dry and off the mud. And it's also going to mean the ground underneath can dry out quicker. Because if you have like a really big load of straw or something, which people often have in their chicken coops, then when the wet weather stops, it takes a really long time for the ground to dry out. So by having the pellets and having that airflow is a really good option. Don't do your whole chicken coop. Like, the chickens still need to scratch, but you'll find there are certain spots that just really hold the water, really hold the mud. Whack a pellet down there.
Yep. And you mentioned in that video there's often places where you can get pellets for free.
Yeah. So as someone that deals with a lot of pellets at work, I can tell you, like, I would literally pay you to come take them from me. Like, businesses just have too many pellets.
Yeah.
So any, like, get on Gumtree.
Yeah.
People will give them for free.
Yep.
If you drive around industrial areas.
The market, do you reckon?
Yeah. Yep. I reckon the markets, definitely. Industrial areas, I often just see them dumped.
Yeah.
So just pick them up. And, like, again, businesses don't need as many as we've got, so just take them.
Yep.
There are, yeah.
Maybe don't just take them. Maybe inquire.
If they're on the street, just take them. Lastly, if you've got bees, this wet weather can be a bit of a problem for your beehives if they're on the ground. Now, I don't recommend anyone keeps their beehives on the ground anyway, but particularly in this wet weather, we need to elevate them because we do not want some torrential water coming down and water getting in the bottom of our beehives. This is a real problem, and it can lead to like issues in the hive because there's just too much moisture. Even if the beehive's not submerged, it's just going to make the bees' job harder to kind of keep their house happy. So you can buy hive stands. That's what they're called. They're about $40. I really like them. I have all my beehives on hive stands. But you can just get some bricks or some pellets or
build your own.
And just build your own. Like, just get the thing off the ground. So we just want water to be able to run down underneath the hive. Mm-hmm. And then if there's grass and everything around the hive, there's going to be moisture that sits on those leaves, on those blades of grass. We want that to be lower. So it's not kind of like getting in the way of the entrance. Mm-hmm. So that's two pointers for your chickens and your bees. And lastly, I'll say, you know how much I hate weeding. If there's ever a time to get serious about your weeding.
Oh my God, the weeds are out of control.
They are out of control. And why wouldn't they be, right? They've got all this, they've got warmth, they've got water, there's not much else in your garden bed because your plants are small, so they've got room. Just
prolific at the moment.
Yes, and you got to get them out.
Okay.
But here's the one benefit I can give you, I could only give you one, is that because the soil is so wet, when you pull out your weeds, you're probably going to have a much better, you're going to have a much better chance of getting all the roots out. So when the soil's dry and hard, you pull a weed out, you'll break it.
Yeah.
When the soil is this wet, you pull a weed out and you'll get the whole kit and caboodle, which is what you need, right? You need the roots and all to come up. So do your weeding now and just take pleasure in the fact it will be easier. Because if come summer when that soil dries out and you're trying to get those weeds out, good bloody luck.
I love that.
Little that silver lining.
Silver lining.
Silver lining.
Chuck on a good podcast and off you go.
Oh, look, I've got one I could recommend to you.
Rooting For You is hosted by Elise and Tess, artwork by Lauren Janine. You can find us on Instagram at RootingForYouPod or email rootingforyou@elisealexandra.com. And remember, we are rooting for you.